The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter number 10, Text number 26, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on November 13th, 2007, in Sofia, Bulgaria.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, Chapter number 10, Text number 26. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. So today's lecture is about sexual pleasure, which is, as Bhagavatam states, Yan maitinadi grihamedi sukham itucham. For the materialist, this is the number one topic, you see. Maitun adi means sexual intercourse is the number one pleasure for the who? Grihamedi, materialistic people. The devotees of the Lord, they are detached from sexual pleasure. They see it as something which can be utilized for the service of the Lord. And if not being utilized in the service of the Lord, they completely reject it. As we were studying last night in the shloka of Jamunacharya, Yadavadi Mamacheta, Krishna Padara Vinde, Nava Nava Rasadamanun Yatarantumasit Tadavadi Vattanari Sangame Smaryamani Bhavati Mukha Shushtu Nishtivanamcha. Ever since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, tasting Nava Nava Rasa, ever increasing pleasure in that service. Whenever the thought of sex pleasure crosses my brain, my lips curl with distaste, and I immediately spit at the thought. There's a very interesting point that Prabhupada makes here in this purport. This explains why sex is so enjoyable, why it's so nectarian, why it's so heavenly. As Prabhupada says, no one would take the trouble to maintain children. There was no taste of heavenly nectar by means of sexual intercourse. In other words, raising children is such an austerity, actually. The mother has to go through all that hassle of bearing the child in her womb, the pain, the trauma of childbirth, and then coming out, there's a screaming in the middle of the night, changing the diapers, and then, you know, you have to pay for the education, and then, you know, the kid's running around screaming. He's putting Crayolas all over the walls. I mean, it's just, it's like hell. And then finally he grows up. You have to work like a dog just to, you know, pay for his college tuition. I mean, it's just one thing. And then he ends up taking drugs and becoming a derelict after all that hard work. I mean, you know, it's really, really tremendous austerity to raise children. If it wasn't for that heavenly nectar they taste when they have sex, no one would want to have children. Nobody would have any children, period. Because it's really, really an austerity to raise children. Very austere. But that pleasure, that heavenly nectar they taste when they have sex, it counteracts all that hell they go through. As one devotee said, king for a day and slave for a lifetime. You see? For one second, he gets to feel like he's the heavenly king Indra, you see. And then after that, he's a complete slave for the rest of his life, you see. But he's willing to be a slave for his whole life just so he can feel like he's king Indra for 1 second only, you see. Is it worth it? You see, an intelligent person realizes it's not worth it to think I'm the king of heaven for 1 minute and then a whole lifetime to be a slave, you see, it's just not worth it. He walks away from it. He says, forget it. It's not worth it. Tapasa brahmacharena shamena cha chagena cha. You see. Tapasa brahmacharena. You see, that is higher taste, you see. And actually, it's a fact. If one actually enters into the mood of Krishna bhakti, we're not interested in heavenly pleasure. Heavenly pleasure is another form of suffering, according to Krishna. You know that shloka? A brahma bhuvana loka punaravartinarjana mamupechitukonteya punarjanmadavijite. Even the heavenly nectar tasted by Indra, the king of heaven, it is actually hell compared to Krishna consciousness. Someone who is actually Krishna conscious, he's not interested in sex, you see. Even if he has a desire for Krishna conscious children, still he's not that interested in sex. I saw one householder when I was a brahmachari one time, one householder couple, the man told me that he and his wife, they were trying to have a child, so you're supposed to chant 50 rounds of japa, you see, before you have sex. Once in a month, according to the most fertile day, according to the girl's menstrual cycle, you see, just after the menstrual cycle. And they must each chant 50 rounds, not 15, 50, 5-0. So they did that. They followed all the rules that Prabhupada gave. You know, after the menstrual cycle, 50 rounds of japa. And then they were so high. They were flying so high on the mantra, they said, forget it. Next month. They were tasting so much nectar from the mantra. They said, forget it. We don't want to come down to the bodily platform. I know one friend of mine, he was never became a devotee, but he made one very... He was the person who taught me the Hare Krishna mantra back in 1968, a friend named Patrick Dolan. But one thing I really appreciated from him, he called sex a body nasty. That was his term for sex, a body nasty. You know, like passing stool or, you know, some gross, nasty thing. And that's actually what it is. One brahmachari was having a hard time with sex desire, so I told him, just think of, you know, licking a toilet. Like licking a toilet. And after he heard that, it helped him to not as let his mind be carried away by it anymore. It's just like licking a toilet, you know. Who wants to lick a toilet? Go lick the toilet, you know. Go there in the toilet room now and stick your head in the commode and lick the toilet. You see, who would want to do such a horrible thing? You see, but sex is like that. Simply toilet licking business. So one who is actually, you know, learned in transcendental knowledge, he realizes why it appears to be so pleasurable, because that is impetus for the householders to have the children. But he realizes it's not really worth it unless you really have a desire, a spiritual desire for raising children, and then you can use it. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said like that. He said that I'm prepared to have sex 100 times if I can raise Krishna conscious children. So if one sincerely has a desire to have children, then one can utilize sex life for that purpose. But otherwise, if you just want to enjoy sex, it's very sinful. And this is a big problem in ISKCON right now. Many householders have this idea that I'm a householder, I can have sex for enjoyment. Before this time, I was giving the initiation here. And one of the initiates, I said, what are the four principles? She said, no sex outside of marriage. I had to immediately say no. Right in the middle of the ceremony, I had to stop the initiation ceremony to explain, no. That's not the meaning of no illicit sex. No sex outside of marriage. Illicit sex means any sex which is not according to the principles given by Prabhupada. Another principle is you take permission of your spiritual master before having sex. You get your spiritual master's permission. You get his blessings that now you can try to have children. Otherwise, you don't even try to have children unless the spiritual master has blessed you that now you can do that. You get guru's blessings, that's the first thing. The second thing is you according to the girl's menstrual cycle, the most fertile day of the month, and then the 50 rounds of japa. So any sex other than that principle is illicit. And such sex will degrade the consciousness. Even if you're chanting rounds, even if you're initiated, you become degraded because you're being attached to sex life. That's what it is. You're attached to sense gratification. It's an offense against the holy name. It's nama parad. To maintain material attachments, you see. If one doesn't strictly follow the rules for a householder, then that means they're maintaining material, they're consciously maintaining their material attachments. And that's nama parad. So in that state, they will not be able to become Krishna conscious and go back to God heaven. Because they're holding on to a desire for illicit sex. So this is a problem we have in our society now. Even one leading temple has printed a manual on Vaishnava etiquette. And in that manual they say that ideally sex should only be for procreation, which means, you know, if you're not on a very high level, then you know, they're condoning that, yes, ideally you shouldn't do it, but that's not the right understanding. The rule is one should not have sex other than according to the principles given by Srila Prabhupada. That is, and anything other than that is simply maintaining our existence in the cycle of breath and death. If one is actually getting a taste from the holy name, then one can easily give up this sex pleasure. One can easily give it up. One is actually tasting the nectar of Krishna's name. Because one pure utterance of Krishna contains more nectar than the entire universe can contain. The nectar that one may, heavenly nectar that one may take by having sex 10 million times is nothing compared to the heavenly, the transcendental nectar in one pure utterance of Krishna. So, in this way we have to understand Krishna consciousness, what it means to be Krishna conscious. To be Krishna conscious means to be free from sex desire. That's Krishna consciousness. If my mind is carried away by sex desire, I am not Krishna conscious. I may wear tilak, I may wear dhoti, or sari, or negdi, you know, so many sutka, and so many things. But if I'm still, my mind is still carried away by sex desire, that means I am not Krishna conscious. Not. And this is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. That means this is the International Society where one becomes free from sex desire. One is no longer disturbed by sex desire. That is the sign of one's actual advancement. Listen. Hare Krishna.
What is that shlok? Bhakti pareshanu bhava varaktir anyat tithai shatrika ekakalnaha. Bhakti pareshanu bhava varaktir anyat tithai shatrika ekakalnaha. Padyama nashayatasna shush tushti pushti chudapayo nagasam. Bhagavatam says that if one is actually Krishna conscious, then you are developing bhakti. You are learning more and more how to experience Krishna within everything.
Within every sight, within every sound, within every aroma, within every taste, and within every sensation of touch. One is more and more and more learning how to connect with Krishna within everything. And the third item, you see, bhakti pare, and the third item is one viraktir, one becomes detached from material sense enjoyment. You see, if one is actually advancing in Krishna consciousness, then one is becoming detached from sex desire, naturally. So in this way, we understand why sex is there, we understand why it's so heavenly, nectarian, and we understand why we can walk away from it without any regret. You see? That, oh, I wanted to taste it, but I didn't get the chance. You see? No. How we can walk away from it without any regret. Vishaya vini vartante nirahara rasavarsang rasopyasya parang drishva nivaratate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. So we simply have to get that higher taste. Pure devotional service, ahaitaki bhakti. You see? We simply have to get that higher taste. And then this lower taste, who cares? You can have it. Let the dogs and swine have it. You see? Let the Grihamedis have it. You see? I don't want it. I don't want to come down to the bodily platform. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to embrace such a nasty, disgusting mentality is sex desire. That's the mood of a Vaishnava. He spits at the idea of sex pleasure. Because he's not artificially, but because he's actually tasting the nectar. He's relishing the sweet nectar, as we discussed last night. Bhayasparsheshvasaktatmam vindat yatmani yatsukam sabrahma yoga yuktatma sukam akshayam ashnute. And such a liberated person, you see, who doesn't rejoice upon attaining something pleasant and lament upon attaining something unpleasant, who is self-intelligent, unbewilderedly, knows the science of God, situated in transcendence, such a liberated person is always in a state of trance, relishing the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized soul enjoys unlimited happiness, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Is there unlimited happiness in sex pleasure? It's only for a few seconds only. It's not unlimited happiness. But the one who is actually situated in Krishna consciousness, he relishes unlimited happiness at every second, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. Let's see them. They claim that sex is the supreme pleasure, but they cannot do that. They cannot relish unlimited pleasure every second from sex. They cannot do that. Sex is the abuse of sex is the cause of so much misery, divorce, murder, rape, broken homes, broken relationships. Sex is the cause of so many problems in the world. Sex desire. So anyway, we're most fortunate that Prabhupada has become. He's given us this higher taste. He said the position of the sex, that how nasty it is. And then Srirup Damodar, taking the position of the scientist, argued with Srila Prabhupada how to continue the species. Prabhupada's response, you finish it, this condemned world. So we don't have any duty to propagate the species. You know that, you know, my grandparents were there and they had my, you know, then my father or mother was born from them, and now it's my duty to keep the family line going. I got to keep the glorious bloodline going, you see, of my family. Otherwise, I fail the forefathers if I don't keep the bloodline going. You see. That's complete rubbish. We don't need seminal parampara. We need guru parampara. That's the parampara we're interested in. You see. We don't need seminal parampara. You see, keep the semen line going, you see. We don't need it. Let the semen go to the brain, you see, instead of into sexual pleasures, you see. That's where the semen should go. If one discharges semen, if the male discharges semen by sex pleasure, by masturbation, if he discharges semen, then he is calling death very near, actually. He is calling death very near. Because the more you discharge semana, you become subject to disease. And Prabhupada says you become subject to sudden death. That means a car accident, slipping on the stairs and hitting your head. These things actually come as a result of passing semana unnecessarily. Sudden death is a reaction. So brahmachari should not masturbate, you see. They shouldn't artificially pass semana out of some lusty desire, you see. The more one discharges semana, you become subject to senility when you're old, which an old man who becomes dumb in his brain, that's because he passed so much semana when he's a young man. So he becomes senile in his old age. If you hold the semana within, then it is called urdhva reta. Reta means semana and urva means rising. In the semana, if you hold it in, it will rise to your brain and you'll become very, very brilliant in Vedic wisdom. You see. If you will hold the semana within your body, you'll become very brilliant in Vedic wisdom. You'll be able to memorize so many verses and understand their purport and explain them in unlimited varieties of ways to attract the conditioned souls to join Lord Chaitanya's movement. So this is, why have sex when you can have two or three kids? Why not be a preacher when you can have 2,000 or 3,000 kids? You see? That's my philosophy. Why have two? People say, well, how many children do you have? Well, I have, right now I have 39. And I have more in the womb on the way, coming. You see? How many people have 39 kids in the modern day world by sex? 39 children. I have 39 children. And more in the womb right now, getting ready to be born. There'll be one more this year. I'll have 40 by the time this tour is over. And I have more coming next year. You see, more and more kids coming out, you see, without passing semen. Instead of passing semen, we pass Vedic knowledge, you see. We pass on this Vedic knowledge into the ear. We inject the Vedic knowledge into the ear, and it brings more and more spiritual children and take birth by this injection of Vedic knowledge into the ear. So anyway, it's really, it's good to know why sex is so attractive, and it's good to know why it's actually not so attractive. Both things we have to know. Why it's so attractive for the material viewpoint that people go mad after it, we have to know why. At the same time, we should know why it's actually disgusting, and it's not really attractive at all. Both things we have to understand. From both angles we have to understand. So now I can ask if there's any questions. Yes.
What to do in a situation when our mind becomes completely controlled by lust or anger or other?
It's very easy. Very easy solution. If you become captivated by lust, and that's the number one, let's face it. Anger comes as a result of unsatisfied lust, actually. The first principle is lust. So, how do you conquer over lust? Well, it's a very simple formula. Who is the inciter of lust? Do you know who is the inciter? The demigod, Kamadev, who incites lust. Actually, there's an actual demigod who actually shoots subtle arrows into the heart to make you lusty. He goes around ping, 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 shooting his little arrows. Cupid, we say in the Western world, Cupid, Kamadev, the god of lust. So he's also called Madan. So there is one. There is that god, the lust god, Cupid, Madan, a common name. But there's another god who is more powerful than that lust god. And his name is Madan Mohan, the attractor of Cupid. So if you find you're sitting there one evening in the Brahmacharya ashram, and all of a sudden you're getting a huge volley of arrows, like a machine gun. Like a machine gun, just riddling your heart. Cupid is just like a machine gun of arrows, riddling your heart with these arrows of lust. And what to do? But somehow or other, you got to get Cupid to aim his arrows somewhere else, right? Instead of into your heart. So how do you do that? You have to invoke that god who is more powerful than Madan, and that's Madan Mohan. You have to say, "My dear Madan Mohan, please attract this Kamadev away from me." Right now, my dear Madan Mohan, Kamadev or Cupid, right now he is shooting my heart with arrows, thousands and millions of arrows of lust are shooting into my heart right now. Kindly attract him away from me. Let him shoot somewhere else, next door or somewhere else, not here. My dear Madan Mohan, please free me from the arrows of Madan. You see, you simply have to ask Madan Mohan. You address Krishna with that specific name, Madan Mohan. My dear Madan Mohan, please free me from Madan, who's filling my heart with his lusty arrows right now. Please, Madan Mohan. So you just have to beg him and beg him, beg him, beg him, and beg. Keep begging, 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 begging. So that Madan Mohan is convinced you really, really want. See, you get what you really want. If you want to feel lusty, Madan is just fulfilling your desire to be lusty. But if you really, really, really don't want to be lusty, then Madan Mohan will call off Madan from shooting those arrows into your heart. So you have to be convinced, you have to make your own conviction very solid that yes, I really don't want to be lusty. You see. So you have to convince Krishna that you really don't want to be lusty. My dear Krishna, I don't want to be lusty. Please free me from Cupid's influence. My dear Madan Mohan. And if the arrows keep coming, that means Krishna is not convinced yet that you really don't want to be lusty. So you have to just keep petitioning Krishna and you have to convince him that you really, yes, my dear Lord, I really, 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 absolutely, totally, positively do not want to be lusty. If you convince Krishna by your sincere prayer, you don't want to be lusty, then those arrows will stop, they'll evaporate. All that lust will be gone and you go, "Oh wow, Krishna is so wonderful. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. He's so much sweeter than any sex pleasure. His name is all I need is the name of Krishna. I don't need any woman. I don't need any sex pleasure. I just need Krishna's name. That's all I need." You'll become peaceful. So the next time you're attacked by Madan, by Cupid, start praying to Madan Mohan like anything, as if your life depended on it. Actually, your life does depend on it. How many brahmacharis fell down because of sex attraction? Look what happened to Ajanmiyo. He became the slave of a prostitute. He was a young Brahmin boy, and his whole life he was the slave of a prostitute. He was even murdering people to satisfy this lusty prostitute. Can you imagine? He became a murderer. So when lust attacks, you have to understand this is the most dangerous thing. My whole spiritual life is at stake right now. My going back to God, I can become a swine, svinya, in my next life. I have to pray like anything to be protected from this. And convince Krishna you're serious. You really don't want to be a victim of lust. That's the way to do it. This process works if you will work the process. Any other questions? I think time is running out. People are looking at the clock. That means time has run out. So everyone is convinced now to give up lust, tell Cupid to go jump in the Ganges. Get out of here, Cupid. Leave me alone, Cupid. I just want to be a pure devotee. Everybody's convinced now. To hell with you, Cupid. Get out of here. Just let me be a pure devotee. One can have children for Krishna consciousness. That's all right. One can be married and have a family. But Cupid should not be a part of it. It should be all on the basis of pleasing Guru and Krishna. Not having a little party with Kamadev. If you give Kamadev an inch, he'll take a mile. Don't give in to Kamadev. Therefore, householders must be very strict in not having illicit sex. It's a great challenge for a householder to not have illicit sex. As one devotee, one sannyasi one time said, it's becoming married is like going to the Sunday feast and not being able to take. See, brahmachari, he's alone in the brahmachari ashram. Brahmacharini, she's alone in the brahmacharini ashram. So they can be detached because the object of enjoyment is not there. But if you become married, then it's like you've gone to the Sunday feast, but you're not allowed to take. There's the plate, but you just got to let it sit there. You see, grihastha life is a great challenge in that way. It's like every day there's a big feast, and you can only once a month can you take. The other 29 days, you have to fast. And then when you don't have children, you can't even have that once a month. Every day, the feast is there. An opulent love feast is there, but you can't touch. Every day you have to be detached from it. So before getting married, one has to be a detached person. Otherwise, married life will spoil. We see many persons who were good brahmacharis, and when they got married, their spiritual life fell to pieces. You see. So if one has a desire to become married man in the future, then one should become a very, very fixed up brahmachari. That's the qualification. Not that, well, my mind is so disturbed I have to get married to get some satisfaction. No. If I have a desire to be a married person in the future, let me become very, very fixed up as a brahmachari or brahmacharini right now. Very solidly fixed so that I can be in the proper state of mind that to attract a very advanced transcendentalist to take birth within that family life, you see. That's the way to do it. All right, we'll stop here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.